Thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Sword and Trial. Today, Graham and I are talking about politics. We are American Christians, and so we have to think Christianly about every area of life. And right now, the United States of America is in political turmoil, and probably will be going forward on the next several months, because of what has been made undeniably evident about our current president, and then the prospect of having a former president be reelected to the White House. So what do you do in days like this? How do Christians think about the political arena? And again, our context is in a constitutional republic. So we hope that this conversation will be beneficial to you. It's something that as pastors, we are conscious of a duty that we have to the congregation we serve regularly. And we appreciate you tuning in to join us today. Welcome to The Sword and Trial. The Sword and Trial is a podcast of Founders Ministries, and Founders exists for the recovery of the gospel and the reformation of local churches. I'm Tom Askell.
And I'm Graham Gundin.
Delighted to have you join us today for this episode. While we are here in the studio recording today, the GOP delegates from every state are meeting to discuss their platform, the Republican Party platform, and what that will be coming out. And all of the talk since the first presidential debate between President Biden and former President Trump has been largely focused upon, is President Biden competent to be the president of the United States? And should he run? Should he stay in office? And if you're a Christian in America, you can't just avoid these conversations. So, Graham, should President Biden resign?
Yes. Yeah, I do think so.
Yeah. So how do you think about this? How are you helping the congregation here at Grace to think about this, your family? That's something that elders, mm-hmm. we have to do. We can ignore it. You know, we can say that, well, that's politics, that's dirty. You know, we're people of the heavenly kingdom, and so we're not going to concern ourselves with that, which is unrealistic and mm-hmm. unhelpful and not loving and not wise. Or you can go off on some kind of wild partisan tangent and just wind up sounding like you're some kind of paid political activist for some political party. That's not right either.
Yeah.
And we are to think Christianly about these things, but we must think Christianly about mm-hmm. them. So tell me how you've been framing this whole debate.
Yeah, you know, the debate, or
in your
the
mind.
Debate
in yeah, your yeah. mind, our debate. Yeah.
Yeah. The, there's a lot of things to talk about. I mean, first off, I mean, we are in a pickle.
Yeah.
This election cycle is, we were talking about earlier, we are in such uncharted waters. The fact that one of the candidates is a convicted felon, right or wrong, I mean, it's true, right? Mm-hmm. And the other one is very clearly struggling with his mental capacities. Mm-hmm. And that's plain as day for anyone to see. So it's a strange election. And like you said, Christians can't afford to ignore it. The American citizen can't afford to ignore it. And one of the things that I often think about, and my wife and I often talk about as well, though we live in an oligarchy, where the upper class elites hold the vast majority of the power, and they do abuse the lower classes in order to gain more wealth and influence and power for themselves. I think that that is true. We're in this problem. We're in this position because of the people. Like, we vote our officials into office, our political servants into office. And though we're often lied to, I mean, we can do the work ourselves, and we can dig out the truth, and we can find the truth, and we can be people who are not so easily deceived. But the American populace today is so easily deceived and is so lacking in virtue that we want to be ruled by people who will abuse us, right? So I think that's the number one. Like, we can't afford to be that people. The fact that good people have ignored politics is the reason why we're in this mess. Second, I mean, when it comes to Joe Biden, you know, when he walked out on that debate stage, my wife and I were just cringing. And before he even uttered a word, I mean, you just see him walk out there and, you know, things are not right.
Yeah.
Second, I mean, we felt pity for the guy.
Sure.
That he's there in that position, and that his family and his party are kind of putting him through that, and his advisors and all that. feeling pity for the man, but then also reminding ourselves that though it's proper to feel pity for him, and because of the office that he holds, it's proper to honor him. Also recognizing that he's a wicked man. Mm-hmm. He has been a liar, a very bad liar since he entered into office. He supports the mutilation of children and the murder of unborn infants. You could go into detail into all the ways in which he has been a wicked, wicked man, the corruption that has been uncovered. So pity him for the position that he's in. Honor him as someone who even God has placed in his position of authority, but also remember who he is as a wicked man.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, and we're going to talk about the GOP candidate here in a minute, too, and President Trump, and everything that you just said can be said almost in the same way mm-hmm. about him. He's a man who seems to have no moral compass, maybe a narcissist, and certainly has personally done all kind of wicked things, and whether he's still of that same character, there are people say that, you know, no, he's not. I don't know. But we don't have a great choice for president in the United States today in terms of the what's going to inevitably be the outcome, given our history and where we are with the two major parties. But as I look at President Biden, probably you have too. I mean, I've had people in my family that have suffered with dementia mm-hmm. at the end of their lives, and it's painful. You know, you care for them, you love them, but never, ever, ever did the thought enter into any of my family's mind that we want to platform someone that we love dearly. We wanted to protect them, mm-hmm. even friends and even those that care about them that want to come see them. You say, well, you know, it's not a good time because it's just not the way that you would show love mm-hmm. for someone who has been affected by the ravages of the fall in their mental capacities being diminished, and all kind of things can come out of their mouths, and they just don't comprehend. And so it's watching that debate, in my mind, I was reminded of, man, we are so far east of Eden, mm-hmm. and the wickedness of sin has been put on full display in so many areas throughout all of history from Genesis 3. But here now we are in the United States of America, and our commander in chief is suffering mentally, and it's evident to everyone, and yet nothing's being done about it. His wife, his children, those who care about him, they should not let this happen. So, I mean, I felt pity and grief. I also felt anger for those who should know better.
Well, and that's the assumption, that his wife and his children would care about him.
Yeah.
Because wives and children care about their husbands and fathers.
Yeah.
But the evidence doesn't seem to be there to suggest that that's the case in the Biden family.
Well, and that's where I think it's a teachable moment for us to say, okay, if these are the natural flows of affection that God has built into humanity and human relationships, the most intimate relationships in family, that we would almost without any fear of being contradicted say in any kind of crowd, yeah, the normal thing to do would be to protect your loved one from that, mm-hmm. and that's not happening, then what's going on? There's something else going on. And I'm afraid that we may not be willing to ask that question and look starkly into the world of possibilities for the answer, because it's too frightening for us. There's something motivating those who have their hands on the lever of power that causes them to do this at great cost, great expense. It goes against nature itself for the sake of what they've determined in their own minds to be a greater good, a greater value to them.
Yeah, well, and I think you said it. It's the power. I mean, they hold the power, and they can't let go of the power. And Joe Biden's is their means of holding on to the power. I mean, what are they going to do if, you know, the Democrat Party, the Biden family, you know, whoever we think is the people holding the power in this situation, what are they going to do if Joe Biden does step aside? As he ought to do, because he's the commander in chief, mm-hmm. right? And he doesn't have the capacity to command our armed forces or to, you know, have the nuclear codes, right? Yeah. So politics and all that aside, I mean, we need a commander in chief who is in command of his faculties. But he is a means, he's a vehicle for power for many people. And yeah. if he steps down from the presidency, or if he remains in power but says he's not going to run again, what are they going to do? I mean, they got to run somebody against Donald Trump, who is far less likely to win. Are the funds from his campaign going to transfer to a new candidate? Likely not, mm-hmm. unless it's Kamala Harris. And we know what her poll look like. And so they got to stick with him if they want to stay in power.
He's already on the ballot in several states. Mm-hmm. And I think that's becoming increasingly more and more states over the next week or two as well. So, yeah, it's a political dilemma, and it does show you that there are things far more important than what God has woven into natural affections on the part of those who are calling the shots here.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Sword and the Trial. I wanted to let you know that we have a special offer for those of you who order from press.founders.org in the month of July. Any order will come accompanied by this wonderful vintage Founders Journal, physical copy. Tom Askell has an article in here, A Lesson from Spurgeon on Evangelism. There's also a wonderful article by Roger Nicole, Polemic Theology, How to Deal with Those Who Differ from Us. So if you make any order in the month of July, go to press.founders.org, you will get one of these vintage copies of the Founders Journal.
Mm-hmm. And another fascinating thing is after the debate, the next 24 or 48 hour news cycles, to see all of these liberal news outlets losing their minds. Oh no, we can't believe it. Did you see what happened?
Yes.
President
yes.
Biden has suddenly lost his faculties. Well,
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
Shocked that this could happen. Who could have known?
So, I mean, that again is another teachable moment. If you have been trusting the mainline media, the legacy media outlets, you're unwise, and you just need to get rid of that. Mm. And there's enough access now online. I mean, not everybody has that, but if you have a computer that hooks up to the internet, then you can find avenues of information. And what I try to do is I listen to the left, the real leftists and the real rightists, and if they ever agree on anything, then I think, well, there's probably something to that, and let's investigate that. But to take what comes across the television stations today from the legacy media, mm-hmm. I mean, that was just a commentary, another commentary that, okay, these folks are not as informed and sharp as they would like for us to believe.
Yeah. And, if you're tempted, because what the legacy media is trying to do right now is they're trying to salvage their reputation. They're trying to salvage their credibility. They have been for months, if not years, lying about Joe Biden's capacities. And then, just in front of the whole world, 50 million people watching this debate, Joe Biden waddles out there and just nobody could ever believe again
right.
that he's in full command of his faculties. And so now they have to, they have to try to salvage their reputation. They've been lying to us and they're like, oh man, oh my goodness. I mean, he was so sharp yesterday. What happened? Yeah. Oh, he's early stage dementia and what have you. So you got the media, you got CNN, MSNBC, even some of his staunchest supporters in the media are saying, boy, he just doesn't have what it takes. We need to find it. Meanwhile, you have the whole Democratic Party. Those who are elected officials all kind of lining up behind Joe Biden saying, no, he's our guy. We trust him. He's got this. It's going to be very interesting. I mean, because the legacy media has for decades, as long as I have been alive, the legacy media has been the propaganda wing of the Democratic Party.
Right.
The Democratic Party doesn't have that propaganda wing anymore. It's rebelling against them. So what are they going to do? Again, we're heading into some uncharted territory. And if you're tempted to believe their second lie. The first lie was Joe Biden's on top of it. He's great. The second lie is, oh my goodness, we're so surprised that Joe Biden's not on top of it. Look how not on top of it he is. That's the second lie. And if you're tempted to believe that lie, just don't. Just don't believe it.
Yeah, it's like maybe they're right. The emperor doesn't have any clothes.
Yeah.
Who could have known before today?
Right.
That was the case. So yeah, you're right. It's uncharted territory in so many ways. And yet what we've lived through, the last 7-8 years or so from our media and our cultural elites, if you still have confidence in those who are telling you, trust us, trust the science, you know, and now have just kind of gone AWOL as there's more and more information coming out that we were just lied to on multiple fronts. Wake up and realize, okay, the folks that are trying to be the gatekeepers of information are not our friends. They don't believe like we believe. They, truth to them is a tool, a weapon. It's not anything that is absolute and unchanging. And those of us who know God, we're living in this world at this time, and we need to have our eyes wide open. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I want to try to help our people to recognize is, okay, this is, you cannot pretend that things are as they've always been, which I think most of our people are past that. I think most of our people have been awakened to those realities. But then to come to proper assessments, biblical assessments, which you laid out a couple of them earlier, we're to honor the president because he is in the position that God has put him in. He mm-hmm. raises up those who are to be world leaders, and those who are not to be, he casts down. So yeah, God has done
he
this.
He gives the kingdoms of men to whomever he wills.
Exactly. So that's definitely true. And yet you can't pretend like that this man is in charge of all of his mental faculties. That is simply unbelievable. It's undeniable that he has these diminished capacities that potentially can harm not only him, but harm the whole nation and nations of the world, and maybe already have done so. I think a case could be made for that. So what do we do? Well, number one, remember, God's sovereign. So what's going on here? I think what's going on here is clear judgment from God on this nation. Okay, if we are being judged by God as a nation, then what is our response? Well, I think Daniel 9 gives us a great expression of to follow there in his prayer to the Lord. I mean, Daniel, we don't have one recorded sin of Daniel in the Bible. Doesn't mean he wasn't a sinner. Of course he was, but it wasn't recorded. Mm-hmm. And God's not shy about recording his people's sins, even right. his key people in the drama of redemption. But Daniel prays, you know, we have sinned.
Yep.
We have sinned. And one of the things that I believe Christians need to do is come face to face with the reality that this has happened on our watch.
Yep.
American Christians, we need to wake up and realize, okay, you know, we're not presidents, we're not congressmen, we don't have our hands on the levers of power politically, but we do have access to the one who brings emperors up and kings up and casts them down, and the one who judges nations. And we have to deal with God. And if there's going to be any hope for America, it will be through the people of God. Which brings me to the whole theme of our upcoming conference in January, you know, revive us, O Lord. That could not be more timely. Yeah. I didn't consciously think of this. I don't think any of us did. But that conference is scheduled to start 4 days after the scheduled inauguration of the next president. Mm-hmm. Now, who knows if we'll even have an inauguration day, you know, or who knows what'll happen. But I'm pretty confident, but by that time, American Christians should be desperate for God to do what only he can do, because we will have lived through months of who knows how to measure what's coming.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to what I said earlier, that, you know, the people are the problem. The citizenry are the problem. And in many ways, people in power have wanted the citizenry to be as feeble as our president and as incapable and as unvirtuous, because we're easier to control that way.
Right.
And that's not, I'm not trying to insult the president. Right. Those are all just statements of fact. But there's a lot of blame then to be laid at the foot of the church as well, because we are a large portion of the population. And what have we done?
Yeah.
What have we done to try to honor God as a nation? How have we been wise as serpents and innocent as doves in our political dealings? Mm-hmm. Why is it that we don't have any of those political levers to pull?
Yeah.
You know, why don't we hold any power in this nation? The kingdom of God is not about us gaining political power, but there are ways in which we can honor God by wielding political power, and we just haven't thought of that as it being important.
Yeah.
And perhaps we have been slow and slothful in our prayers to the Lord that he would actually revive us and he would enable us to be a nation that honors him, thinking that, no, that's impossible. No, you know, the great tribulation's coming and, you know, everything's going to get worse, inevitable. So why pray for it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then that also leads, I mean, conservative Christians don't have a lot to say about what happens in the Democrat Party, but we do have actually quite a lot to say about what happens in the Republican Party, given the fact that we are the largest voting bloc in the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
But how is the Republican Party doing in reflecting the values that the Lord wants us to reflect? Thank you for joining us today for this conversation on the sword and the trowel. I wanted to make you aware and give you some more details on the regional conference that we are going to be having coming up here this July. That's July 26th and 27th, and it is the conference on family life and the negative world. Pastor Tom Askell, Dr. Joel Beakey, and myself will all be there speaking for that conference. It's going to be a wonderful time. You can go to founders.org/family life in order to register for that conference. It's just a shorter conference, a regional conference. It's just 2 days, but it's going to be a wonderful time of fellowship and thinking about what God has to say to us when it comes to how we are to live in families, be family members, and raise our families in an increasingly hostile world.
Yeah. I mean, that takes us right back to what's going on as we are meeting here with the Wisconsin gathering of the delegates to determine the party platform going forward. I think that we have to come face to face with the reality that American Christians have been allergic to power.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt like that power is somehow inherently sinful. You know, power corrupts. And so we've heard all of this. And certainly there's a wrong way. You know, you can be power hungry and you can go for power in sinful ways. But what does it mean to love your neighbor in a constitutional republic? What does that mean? Would it be, if it was in your power, to have a godly magistrate versus an ungodly, wicked magistrate? Would the most loving thing to do to be to put that godly magistrate in power? Absolutely, it would. If I want what's best for my neighbors, I don't want my neighbors to be mutilated anymore. Mm. I don't want little children to be chopped up by surgeons who've sworn a Hippocratic oath to first do no harm in the name of affirming them in their identity. That is not loving.
Mm-hmm.
And if I understand that that's actually hating people, to let that go on when it's in my power in any degree to stand against it and try to stop it, then I'm going to have to get over this sense of, oh no, you know, to engage in anything that might bring power to us politically is sinful, it's dirty, and it dilutes the message of the church. I got to get over that.
Mm-hmm.
The church is not a political action committee, but that's right and true. And so we should not be partisan shills for anybody, but we ought to be saying, this is what the Lord says, and this is what is right, this is what is good, this is what is true, this is what is beautiful, and we want that for our neighbors.
Yeah, and I think this is where a robust two kingdoms theology can be helpful. You know, a Christian can be a Christian in the church, and the Christian in the church isn't necessarily super concerned about, you know, how much political power they can gain, but a Christian in the church is not merely a Christian in the church. They are a Christian who's in the world as well.
Yeah.
And a Christian who's in the world ought to think about, how can I wield political power to love my neighbors? The fact is, like, there's political power, and it will be wielded by someone. Is it going to be wielded by someone who has a greater capacity to control their vices, or somebody who's just totally given over to their vices?
Yeah.
And so Christians who have the Spirit and who have been given self-control ought to think, you know, I can love my wife and my children and my brothers and sisters in the church, and also the pagan who lives next door who is my neighbor, by wielding political power for
That's
their
right.
good. And, you know, sometimes wielding political power sounds really, really gross, but like when you go to vote in November, you're wielding political power.
Absolutely.
And often what the argument against what we're saying, or one way that I think people will mischaracterize what we're trying to say, is, oh, you're allergic to persecution. You don't want to be persecuted as a Christian, and you're afraid of that. And the church has always been persecuted, and the Lord's always protected the church from persecution. Well, first off, no, I don't want to be persecuted as a Christian. And I don't think any Christian should want that. And we ought to seek to avoid that insofar as we can. But second, it's not just about me being persecuted as a Christian by a tyrannical state. It's also about my wife and my children and my brothers and sisters in Christ. And then also my neighbor who's not a Christian being persecuted by a tyrannical state. And so it's not just about love of self. It's about love of God and love of neighbor.
Yeah, and this often bleeds quickly into the whole religious liberty argument. You know, don't you believe in religious freedom, religious liberty, and the fact that we ought to be concerned about our Muslim neighbors and our Buddhist neighbors and our atheist neighbors, and mm-hmm. we shouldn't try to exert Christianity in the public square because to do that is to be repressive of them. That's crazy, mm-hmm. because the best hope that my Muslim and Buddhist and atheist neighbors have is for Christianity to have significant influence in this culture, in this nation, and in the political systems of this nation. Mm-hmm. Because where there is vital godliness that is working its way through to pursue righteousness, then they're not going to be put to death because of their unwillingness to bow the knee to Jesus, because that is not the way mm-hmm. of Jesus Christ. Whereas you can't say that about Islam.
Yeah.
So one of the arguments about religious liberty, I mean, I've said this actually to some unbelieving people, friends that I have, is, look, you better hope that Christianity wins out in our culture. And that's the reason that you've been able to have your atheist clubs, mm-hmm. is because of the Christian foundations of this nation. And now they're crumbling, and you might see that as a good thing because the stuff that you hate, you don't believe, is fading in significance. But it's coming for you as mm-hmm. well, because it will soon be so dystopian, and we're already there in multiple ways, that the one who has the biggest stick is the one who's going to make the rules. Mm-hmm. And if you don't line up with him, then you're going to have your head taken off too.
Yeah. And you know, that thinking about the GOP meeting right now and our influence over the GOP again, like we evangelical Christianity, and you know, a lot of our listeners are members of Southern Baptist churches. We're mm-hmm. pastors in a Southern Baptist church, particularly the Southern Baptist Convention. It's such a massive denomination and has a large voting block, one of the largest voting blocks in the Republican Party. Does the Republican Party reflect conservative evangelical political values?
Yeah, not at all. And they're trying to get even further away from it now. If they remove this plank about abortion and take that out because of former President Trump's abdication of that ground that he at least pretended to stand on, and he appointed, you know, good judges, and praise God for that. But yeah, we're facing a situation now to think Christianly about the political parties and the two candidates. We well could have two candidates standing on political platforms that, you know, neither one of which you can get excited about. Mm-hmm. And at that point, what are you going to do? Well, I've got friends that are going to opt out. They've already opted out.
Yeah.
And they're not going to vote for either candidate. And I can't throw stones at them for that. What I can say is that given political realities that we have in this country right now, one of two candidates is going to be elected. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, well, do you go with the lesser of evil?
I know who one of those candidates is right now. We're not sure about the Democratic candidate.
That's right. But yeah, one of two parties is going to have a candidate elected. Do you go with the lesser of evil? Well, in one sense, you know, all politics and political decisions is the lesser of evils. And so I get that, you know, and I get Spurgeon's quote too, when faced with two evils, don't, you know, go with neither, you know, so mm-hmm. it's not like a zero sum game, maybe. Though politically, it is binary. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can say whatever you want to, and you can maybe keep your conscience unsoiled by it. And I think this is where the debate needs to be held. This mm-hmm. is where responsible Bible-believing Christians need to be willing to press one another mm-hmm. and recognize, okay, there's room here. I don't see how anybody can vote for a platform that advocates the murder of children up to the point of death, up mm-hmm. to the point of birth, and have the government pay for it. I mean, that's crazy to me. Yeah. If the Republican platform gets gutted on that issue, and maybe even has other issues embedded in it that I, you know, would find highly offensive, well, then, okay, the question is, can you vote for somebody standing on that platform? Well, mm-hmm. you know, I'm having a struggle in my own soul about that one as well.
Yeah, you know, I remember as a small child, when Bill Clinton was president, the only thing I really knew about Bill Clinton was that you know, he was okay with abortion. Mm-hmm. That's just hearing my parents' conversations that they had. And so I would pray regularly that, you know, Bill Clinton would no longer be president so he could get rid of abortion. It's interesting that Donald Trump really isn't that far away from where Bill Clinton was in the 90s on the issue of abortion. I mean, he hasn't used the words safe, legal, and rare, but he's like, yeah, well, just not too much abortion is basically where Donald Trump is at. And that's where a lot of the Republican Party is following because, politically speaking, they think that that's where they need to go. Again, the same question, like, how do we get power? And getting power, again, like we just said, it's not a bad thing. But when you start to sacrifice vitally important truths like thou shalt not murder infant children by the millions in order to get political power, then you got to start rethinking. And so, you know, what they're doing to Joe Biden in order to retain power, well, the Republican Party is not doing much better. What they're willing to sacrifice on the issue of abortion to gain more power. And I know people are going to say, well, they need to talk that way because they need to get into office so that they can actually do something about the illegal immigrants. And so they can actually do something about the abortion issue. And there's so many compromises and there's so many ways to justify it. But again, it is a tough decision. Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Sword and the Trowel. I wanted to make you aware of two new resources that we have from Founders Press. The first is a little booklet called Forbid Them Not by Ted Christman, Rethinking the Baptism and Church Membership of Children and Young People. One of the challenges for Credo Baptist families and Credo Baptist pastors is how do we treat our children who are making valid professions of faith in the church? Some Baptist churches wait until 18 years of age to baptize them. Ted Christman makes a wonderful argument against that practice and for welcoming even young Christians into the fellowship. So I would recommend you go to press.founders.org to pick up this book. Another publication from Founders Press is The Ten Commandments by B.H. Carroll. Obviously, this is a republication. B.H. Carroll was a Baptist pastor and founder of the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, so a great Reformed Baptist. And this is his commentary on the Ten Commandments. Very practical, very theological, very helpful study of all Ten Commandments. So go to press.founders.org to pick up one of these two copies. And there are also several other books there that are available for pre-order as well. Personally, I don't mind saying like where I'm at right now. We're 4 months from the election. I intend to vote for Donald Trump for president. Because of who I think is going to come into office with him. I think there are going to be thousands of good, I have friends who have been asked to serve in the Trump administration, who are good, conservative, even reformed Christians who hold to their values. And I think that's great. But it's not a super easy question to answer.
No, I mean, the last two times I held my nose, you know, and said, okay. A little more hopeful the second time because of the good things that happened the first time that were, you know, some of them not fully expected. But yeah, it's a dilemma for Christians to think through and to realize what you said, that we're in one sense, you're electing a president, and that's most important, but you're electing a whole bunch of folks that will go with him into positions of authority and influence and power. And you know, there's no guarantee on any of that.
And another thing is, you know, I forget who said it, but voting is not a sacrament. And it's a political act, and politics is strategic in nature.
Right.
And so, you know, strategically, what are you doing politically to see righteousness promoted and wickedness punished in your nation? So it's a political calculus that you have to make in your vote. It's not, you know, just because I vote for a particular candidate does not mean that I am now complicit in everything that candidate has said and done, right? And so we need to not treat it like it's a sacrament. We do need to treat it for what it is. It is a political strategic move in an exercise of power.
Yeah, and where this really comes down to a point of inflection for me is on the whole issue of abortion. You know, I've had conversations like this one recently with very, very thoughtful Christian leaders, and talking about the prudential way forward on the abortion question. You know, there's no way we're going to get an abolition next week. It's just not going to happen. And so what do you do? Well, you get what you can. You know, you get what you can. You try to mitigate the worst excesses of it, and you keep moving the ball down the field. In one sense, okay, you know, I see where you're coming from with that argument. But the way that I've framed it in my own mind in these conversations is, okay, so we've got millions that have been slaughtered over decades, a million a year, maybe more now after Roe v. Wade was rescinded than even before. And if that were happening outside on the streets right now with two-year-olds, would your ethical argument hold water? And it just wouldn't. Mm. It wouldn't. I mean, and I think that we've become so hardened and cauterized in our emotions and our thinking that we're just not willing to face up on to what's really going on. Mm. That, the pagan nations that Israel drove out of Canaan, who sacrificed their sons to Moloch, they got nothing on us. Mm. They didn't do it nearly as efficiently as we do it today. Mm. And if that's true, if what we're saying is really a Holocaust, we look back and we blame the guy who said, I was only driving the train. You know, I only drove the truck. I didn't pull anybody into the gas chambers. I didn't turn on the gas. If you got opportunity to stand against this horrible, wicked, evil, and call for its complete eradication from our land, knowing that, yeah, prudentially, there's no way forward for that. Mm-hmm. And you don't do that. Is it politically expedient? Is that the right way forward to say, well, we got to, you know, do this in order to get that. So mm-hmm. hopefully down the road, that's a tough pill to swallow.
Well, you end up having a political class that knows nothing but compromise.
Exactly.
And that's what we have. Even, you know, the best among us in DC, and in our state capitals, that's just compromise is how they operate.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And I'm listening to a historian give a series of lectures over what happened in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And he said, you know, some people just shouldn't be politicians. He said, politicians, cutthroat, you get stabbed in the back. And if you can't take that and you don't realize that goes with the territory and you have to do this to get that, he said, you know, politics is not for you. And I think, well, okay, you know, I get that because I couldn't I couldn't do that, you know. But if that's the way it's got to be, I don't know. I don't want to believe that, but maybe so. But it doesn't change the fact that we have an authority that we have to stand under. And we have to be willing to say what the Bible says. And so these guys that call themselves Christians in the political realm that can't bring themselves to say, no, abortion is murder of image bearers, God's image bearers, and we should not be satisfied until the murder of anyone is illegal for everyone, as my friend Bradley Pierce puts it so eloquently. If we can't say that because we think it's not politically expedient, well, I think maybe your conscience has been captured by something other than the Word of God. Mm-hmm. Well, these are tough issues, and yet they're issues we have to think about. We can't ignore them, and we have to be willing to have the conversation. And I think one of the things that we want to do as elders here at Grace Baptist Church in Cape Coral is to try to understand the right boundaries of the arguments. Let's draw the boundaries clear. And then let's have those debates and press one another, help think together about, okay, what is the best way forward? And there may not be one avenue there, mm-hmm. but there are going to be some things that are going to be outside those boundaries, and we have to call them and say, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But inside of these boundaries, let's pray and realize that we're going to have to make some decisions. But at the end of the day, what needs to be done, only God can do.
Yeah, and one other note of advice as well when it comes to politics is that your local elections matter far more That's than right. your vote in national elections.
Absolutely.
This year in Florida, we've got a massive issue with Amendment number 4 on our state constitution. That's bigger than any presidential election. But, you know, who's going to be your sheriff? Who's going to be your county commissioner? Who's going to be on your city council? Those are all incredibly important issues for you and for your neighbors and for your family. So pay attention to those things.
That's right. You know, and we've got one of our own members is being challenged for his circuit judgeship here mm-hmm. in Southwest Florida, Eric Leontief. He's the kind of guy you want sitting on the bench because he's unassuming, he's quiet, he's godly, he's thoughtful, and, you know, he has a great legal mind. And it's people like that, you know, that mm-hmm. you ought to, where you can, get behind and try to encourage to stand firm and pray that God would have mercy on your arena, your area, mm-hmm. and give you the kind of God-fearing civil magistrates that can do good for you locally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we're called to love our neighbor. And who do we have the greatest responsibility to love? Well, those who are nearest to us.
That's proximity. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Man, what a great conversation. It's not the last time we will talk about these things because they are pressing in on us all the time. And we just want to say to our fellow pastors especially, but all Christians, to be thoughtful. Don't disengage. You know, don't check out because it's so complicated and it's so frustrating. Realize that on multiple levels, we have a responsibility to honor God because righteousness exalts a nation and blesses that nation whose God is the Lord. And so we ought to be concerned about what happens within the borders of the United States of America. And you ought to love your neighbors. And you can love your neighbors by how you vote, by what you do, and how you operate in the constitutional republic that we have in the United States. So thanks for joining us today on this episode of The Sword and Trowel. If we can serve you any way here at Founders, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. It'll be our joy to try to do so.